I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome back to Radio Times. You know you've made it when you appear as a character on The Simpsons. Crossword puzzle writer Merle Riegel was featured a few years ago with Will Shortz. Here's the setup. Lisa decides to become a competitive puzzler, and Homer bets against her in a contest. Homer then apologizes to her through a New York Times crossword puzzle written by Merle Riegel. Let's listen.
Dad? I know this is crazy, but did you plant a message to me in the New York Times crossword puzzle?
Well, I had a little help from this guy.
New York Times crossword editor Will Shortz! And master puzzle constructor Merle Riegel!
I actually wrote that crossword, and I edited it. Now get back to crosswording!
Merle Riegel joins us today on Radio Times to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the crossword puzzle. He's one of the most popular, inventive, and humorous puzzle authors or writers, and he's syndicated in more than 50 papers, including here in Philadelphia in the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's compiled a collection of his puzzles to mark this anniversary. I should add, he was born in Audubon, New Jersey, just across the river from Philadelphia, lives now in Tampa. And Merle Riegel, it's been a couple of years. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It is a thrill to be back.
And how does a puzzle master celebrate the 100th anniversary of the crossword puzzle?
Well, first we buy a lot of alphabet soup, and then we play strip boggle.
Oh, you do?
We used to play strip scrabble, but it was too slow.
Can I come to that party?
Sure.
And what was it like to be in The Simpsons? As I said, I think it's probably everyone's fantasy to somehow end up as a character on that show, even for a couple of seconds.
Well, you left out, I have actually seven words. You left out the last two, which is yes, sir. Yeah. So you left those out. Now, that was a gas. I mean, once they write you into the episode, you go into a little room, and even though I was in Tampa, Florida, all the writers are in your head, you know, from L.A., and the writer is telling you how to say the lines.
Oh, wow.
But they were saying a lot of other stuff I probably can't say it on the air.
Oh, is that right?
But they're talking in your head, and so, you know, just to how do you say, I actually wrote that crossword. I actually wrote that crossword. I actually, you know, there's a million
there
ways to say
it.
Say, no, do it like this. So that was, it was fun being on it because it's true, not too many people are asked to be on the show.
Oh.
And it was just really a gas.
And you did write a puzzle for the show and then also a puzzle for the Times related to the show.
I wrote all of the puzzles, or almost all of the puzzles you see in the episode, including the one that they have the contest with that Lisa and the guy go at the end. And there was also the last thing that Lisa says that, did you have a puzzle?
Yeah.
Did you figure out a way to make a puzzle for the New York Times? And Homer spent all his winnings on, like, I'm still waiting for my share of that, by the way. He said he spent all his winnings on hiring Will Shortz and myself to do a special puzzle where there's a secret message that apologizes to her. And the message runs diagonally through the grid. So if you didn't know it, if you didn't see the episode, you wouldn't know it. But the other one is the first letter of every clue says, "Dear Lisa, I really love you." Where was I? I mean, what was I supposed to say? I mean, all that was in the answers. So I had to sort of figure out how to do that too. It was enormously weird.
And any "doh" in there as well?
No, there were no DOHs. Only in the first crossword puzzle there was.
Well, in fact, there was a DOH in the first
crossword puzzle.
This is December 21st, 1913.
Right. The very first crossword puzzle was shaped like a diamond, appeared in the old New York World. The guy who did it was a guy named Arthur Wynn, who was a puzzle guy. He had grown up in Liverpool, England, wanted to be a newspaper guy and came over to America when he was 19. And when he was on the New York World, he had a special, you know, weekend, a holiday coming up. So he did this puzzle that was shaped like a diamond. He numbered the clues in a strange way, but he numbered them. We don't do that today. There was no horizontal or vertical then. That came later. But one of the answers, I mean, he had a lot of unusual words in this puzzle. You would think with just 32 words, you could do common words, but no. One of the answers like NEIF, N-E-I-F, which I've never heard of.
Is that a real word?
It is, I guess, in Scotland. Was TANE, T-A-N-E, and things like that. But one of them was D-O-H, which in the dictionary at the time was the fiber of the Gomudi palm. Yeah, so he didn't do the Homer version. He just did what was available at the time.
And was it popular from the get-go?
Yes, instantly. It was originally called a word cross. And due to a typographical mistake in the second or third week, it came out crossword, and Arthur Wynn liked that better. He said, that sounds better. Mm-hmm. So they stuck with crossword, and they immediately got tons of mail about it. It was a huge success, but when Arthur Wynn said, you know, we should copyright this or something, you know, and but his bosses at the World, which included the sons of Joseph Pulitzer, said, no, 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 it's going to go away in a year. It's a fad. It's going to disappear. Why copyright it? So, and Arthur Wynn, to this day, when he died, he said, I never made a penny off the crossword puzzle.
Wow. And continued to do crossword puzzles?
He made them for a while after that, and then he invited readers to make them. And so for most of the time, the first 8 years, that from 1913 to 1921, it was a combination of his making puzzles and for people sending them in. And the rules were kind of like the first one. Weird words were fine. He kind of got tired of them after a couple of years himself, so... they're just, you know, I always felt like that because there were such obscure words in the first ones, this set the tone for obscure, cruddy answers and puzzles for years to come. But yeah, he did it for 8 years, then turned it over to somebody else.
Well, you have a picture in your book of you and his daughter, Kay Wynn Cutler, who you tracked down.
Yes, this is an interesting story, but I'll try to make it short. I don't think many of us in the puzzle world knew there was a last daughter. He had a daughter when he was 62.
Wow.
And living in – still living up here, but I think he moved to Clearwater, Florida. And when he died in 1945 in Clearwater, Florida, his daughter was only 11. And I think most of us in the puzzle world did not know she existed until we started hunting around on the internet, and friends of ours, we have a connection in Brazil, you know, who has a lot of information about this sort of stuff, but we finally tracked her down, my wife called her, Marie called her, and she picked up the phone, and there we are talking to Arthur Wynn's only surviving daughter, who is 80. We've had breakfast, lunch, and dinner with her since then. We just had dinner with her, like, Sunday night, and she filled us in on a lot of information I've always wondered about Arthur Wynn, most of which was, where is he buried?
You know, where is he buried?
He is not buried. He was cremated, and they think his ashes were scattered in the Gulf, where he loved the fish, the Gulf of Mexico. They lived right on the Gulf. And that's cleared up that mystery, because I thought, what, did they ship him back to the family home in Liverpool or what? But now we know all that information, and she's just been like an incalculable source of clearing things up.
And is she a crossword puzzle person?
She is one of the few puzzle people in that family that is. Yeah, you would think, well, maybe you wouldn't think, but, you know, Arthur Wynn was a big crossword fan that every single kid would be, every single relative. No, there are very few crossword fans in the Wynn family, but she is one of them.
Well, we should also give some credit to a woman named Margaret Petherbridge. That was her maiden name.
Right.
And she really, it sounds like she kind of not just popularized, but also, I guess, what, regularized crossword puzzles?
Yeah, I would say standardized.
Or standardized.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, and when Arthur Wynn turned the puzzle over to somebody in 1921 or 22, it was to a Smith grad named Margaret Petherbridge, who wanted to be a journalist. Last thing in the world she wanted to do was to be the queen of the crossword puzzle. So she just let it ride for a year. She just put in the ones that were the most unusual shapes and didn't edit them until, you know, they hired this great columnist named Franklin P. Adams. And Franklin P. Adams was the most popular columnist on the world. And he would come in every Monday morning and throw on her desk, you know, all the mistakes she missed in the puzzle on Sunday. And she had finally been shamed enough after a year to look at the puzzles, and she couldn't solve them. And so she said, okay, well, I better clean these up. So she set down a bunch of rules, almost all of which we still go by.
Is that right?
Yeah, and that standardization has held for almost all these years. She's the one that started across and down. They called it horizontal and vertical at the time, but to have the across clues first, the down clues second, to do the numbering normal, not like
Arthur.
Don't
fill up the whole space, right?
Right. The very first crossword, if you ever see a copy of the very first crossword, which is on Wikipedia, yes, the numbers were so big in the squares you couldn't write the letters in. That's one thing. The second thing was he put a number at the closing square too. So you started in this square and you ended in that square. So the clues were things like 1 to 8, and you wrote if there's a black square there, right, there's no reason to have the ending spot. So Margaret cleaned that up too, and she really standardized the puzzle. So now they were square all the time. She avoided all the cruddy, weird, obscure words. She just laid down a lot of rules, and she happened to be there when two guys came to her in 1924 to do a crossword puzzle book, the first ever crossword puzzle book. And these two guys were named Simon and Schuster. They'd never published the book before. It was a double first: first ever crossword book, first ever book published by Simon and Schuster. That was an instant success: 400,000 copies in 4 months, 2 million copies in 2 years. You know, so that catapulted Simon and Schuster into the publishing biz. And that Simon is Carly Simon's dad. If you ask Carly Simon about the history of the crossword puzzle, she can tell it chapter and verse.
And we should say Petherbridge then married a Farrar, right?
Yes, in 26, I think it was Margaret Petherbridge who co-edited that first crossword book. And all the Simon and Schuster series books up through 134, she married a guy named John Farrar, who was, I think, in publishing at the time. And so as Margaret P. Farrar, she went on to be this publishing...
Farrar, Straus, and Giroux,
that's right. And when the New York Times, after the New York Times for years in their editorials would cut down the crossword saying it was a waste of time, this is in the 20s, you know, it's like people should have better things to do, it's going to go away soon, hopefully, you know, but in 1942 they finally gave in and started a crossword puzzle on Sundays, and they hired Margaret P. Farrar to be the editor.
Well, in fact, in my billboard, I quoted from the New York Times calling crossword puzzles a sinful waste.
Yeah, they weren't on board, really.
They apparently were not on board.
Yeah.
And you started doing crossword, I guess, creating crossword puzzles when you were, what, 6 years old?
6 years old, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember, because when I was living across the river in Lindenwald, New Jersey, and when I was 10, I said, we used to get the Philadelphia Inquirer, these big, huge Sunday Inquirers, stacks of them at something called the Berlin Auction. Now, this wasn't an auction. It was like a long building. It was really more like a flea market in Berlin, New Jersey. And on Friday evenings, I remember my dad would take me there, and on Friday evenings, they would have stacks of the Inquirer, of the Sunday Inquirer. I said, how did they do that? How did they know what the news is going to be on Saturday and Sunday? But they had a magazine in there that had a big Sunday crossword in there that had gray black squares. And I said to my mom, I'm going to be this puzzle someday.
Wow.
And when I was 10, and today I am.
Indeed you are. But obviously you were a kid that understood language. And I know you have a very playful approach to your crossword puzzles, very humorous as well. But are you, and even as a kid, were you one of those kids that was just constantly kind of turning words over in your head?
Yes.
And maybe even today?
Oh, yes. That never goes away. It's an affliction that never ceases.
Like a punster, right?
Yes, I like puns. But it's also one of those things where you see race cars, the same frontwards and backwards. Not just words like level and madam. Those are all kind of famous ones. Right. But race car, as we would say, is the same in forward and reverse. But also the mere fact that you can make crossword puzzles as thickly interlocking as we do in America. You know, they don't do it in England. They have a whole different style. They interlock every other letter. That means it's a lot easier to make puzzles over there. So all their answers are easy. Their thing is the clues are ultra, ultra tricky. But over here, we have this thick all-over interlock where every letter has to be in two words. And in most American-style puzzles, you can't have anything shorter than three letters, no two-letter words. And so we have to really thicken up. That interlock is pretty thick. So we just have to be able to know lots and lots of words all the time. And I was always amazed that you could actually do this in English. And on top of that, then the whole thing about puzzles. When I was a kid, I was into Highlights for Children. They always had a crossword. I would read things in Reader's Digest. Like, you know, name a six-letter word that contains five pronouns. Oh, okay, let me think, you know. So anyway, so that's kind of, I was just into that totally as a kid.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Merle Riegel. And he's one of the most popular and inventive puzzle authors or writers, crossword puzzle authors or writers, and joins us on Radio Times celebrating the 100th anniversary of the crossword puzzle this year. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Paul Winter Consort presents a holiday gathering of friends, old and new, including a set by Paul Winter's early jazz sextet, reunited after 50 years. As always, the winter solstice celebration happens in New York's Cathedral of St. John the Divine, and we hope you'll join us for our annual holiday broadcast from NPR.
Saturday night at 10 on WHYY.
Are weeds fresh from the sea good for your plants, or do they contain a sucker punch of salt? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss what to do if you find a pile of seaweed on the shore. Plus, answers to an especially large selection of your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
Yeah. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, cooking for crowds isn't always easy, especially when you screw something up, just like author Mary White did with her Ukrainian soup.
But the usual thing I did besides crying was call up the cook down the block, who happened to be Julia Child.
That's lucky.
Man, was it ever.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, celebrating the 100th anniversary of the crossword puzzle with our guest Merle Riegel, one of the country's most popular and inventive crossword puzzle writers. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And Merle Riegel and I were talking before the show began, where I said that I don't do crossword puzzles because I don't have a brain that can retrieve facts. I guess that's
right.
I don't know how else to put it. But obviously, your brain works very differently from mine.
I call that a sponge-headed brain because you can sop up pointless information all the time, and most people have enough to worry about their passcodes and names of people and phone numbers and stuff. But to me, like, the English language is the best toy a kid ever had, because there's so many unusual things about it. There's so many words that are funny. You know, why do we say broad daylight? Of all the we know daylight is broad. Why the word broad daylight? Why is an amateur always rank? Does he smell? You know, why? It's always a rank amateur. Why is a
I'd love to be inside your brain for a while. It'd be probably pretty
You might regret it, but yeah. Yeah, but there's a lot of things about language that's just strange. I don't know why we say head over heels in love. Aren't we head over heels right now?
Yeah.
Sitting here?
Yeah.
You think it would be heels over head in love. You know, like, oh, you're crazy, like flipping in love. But,
right.
But just sitting here in love is not right. That's not, you know, anyway. So the language is just, why is your pocketbook called a pocketbook? Is it a book?
Yeah. And why is my name, when you rearrange the letters, macaroon
system? The macaroon system?
Macaroon system,
well,
which you just told me.
You must be part of the macaroon system. There's probably one out there somewhere, you know, like the solar system, only it's macaroons.
Is this how you work on a puzzle? I mean, when you're writing a puzzle, is this what's happening with you, which is just you're just accessing the world of words?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's so many. You kind of go through a lot of little automatic things. There's anagrams, there's reversals, there's all kinds of things. I mean, you mean the fact that golf backwards is flog? I mean, this is
right.
A famous thing, because flog,
right.
Flog does mean to whack at something repeatedly. That sounds like golf, you know, the way I play. But that's just accidental. Wonton soup backwards is not now, which is why it never arrives. But, you know, it's just strange things about language. Why we say things. What words, what things happen when you just accidentally drop a letter off? You know, egrets, I've had a few.
Yeah.
What an alligator
egret
would say. Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe.
This is why I can't do puzzles, but I can appreciate them.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just a matter of seeing, like, a word like eye-catching was a common expression, mm-hmm. eye-catching. But if you think in terms, that could be something they do at the Stephen King County Fair. You know, now that starts a whole idea about what other things would be happening at the Stephen King County Fair. But eye-catching would be one of them. You know, monster trucks would mean something else. You know, a thing or two means something else. So the little things like that just give me ideas. They're hiding everywhere. They're actually just waiting to be found. And if you have the time to look, like me, you can find them.
Well, you had mentioned, the early on puzzles and the response from the public. I'm assuming that the people that do your puzzles are probably very opinionated about what's a good crossword puzzle, whether that was a good one that you just did or not, or maybe, you know, debating you on some fine point of that puzzle.
Well, I think that's the temperament of all crossword fans.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
But I do get I don't get as much hate mail as a person does when you change puzzles. When I first went into the Enquirer, they kicked out a puzzle to put me in. And the people who liked the old-fashioned puzzle that was in there before, you know, really let you have it. You know, so but in a year, it was a whole different story. Once they sort of see what I'm doing, you know. And I like puzzles that are more populist. I like playing with the language more. I mean, I'll do some gimmicks, but I like puns. I like telling people things that they may not have noticed about stuff, you know. I just like... you know, it is true about puns and cliches And there are things I can't do. I can't step across certain lines. I can't say incontinence is our number one problem.
Why can't you do that?
I mean, some people might, but it's because, as I said in the movie Wordplay, it doesn't pass the Sunday morning breakfast test. I mean, people are sitting there
bodily functions?
Bodily functions, yeah. You can't do bodily functions. Not really cool. Because they just, it kind of puts a damper on the humor thing, you know. So, I just try not to do that kind of stuff.
Are there certain words that you think are just kind of cheating?
Well, we have to use a lot of cruddy words. Yeah. That's what you mean. I mean,
well, a little bit, yeah.
NEE, the word for born. I mean, there's an awful lot of crap we have to use in crosswords just because it bails us out of a corner. But if I had, that's the vowel-rich words. If it weren't for all the vowels, we couldn't really do what we're doing. They're the glue that holds the regular things together. The words like hallo and iota and idea, aria, that we couldn't crossword if we didn't have those words. One of my favorite words is gubernatorial, especially when Jimmy Carter was president.
Yes.
I mean, goober is a peanut. You know, I can't imagine that when he was governor of Georgia, every time they had gubernatorial in a headline, that the headline writers must have cracked up. Gubernatorial.
Well, we are talking about crossword puzzles with one of the great authors of crossword puzzles, Merle Riegel, joining us here in our Philadelphia studio. And this year, in fact, this month marks the 100th anniversary of the crossword puzzle. So we are celebrating some of that history and also talking about how he does what he does. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I'm sure you've been asked this question before, but is there a crossword puzzle of which you are most proud?
Most proud. Boy, oh boy.
Well, you just felt like I nailed it.
I've done that many times, and especially the ones that I thought would never happen. There was one puzzle, and I probably can't remember it, but there was some of these puzzles sometimes take 10 or 15 years to actually happen.
Really?
I have lots of little notebooks that I write puzzle ideas in. There was one that was about a kindergarten crime spree because I noticed that the word finger painting, finger pointing, and finger printing are almost all the same word except for one letter different.
It's true.
And I thought, well, finger painting, finger pointing, because I was watching an episode of some cop show and they said, well, now the finger pointing begins. I thought, oh, finger pointing, finger printing. But the finger painting part put it into a kindergarten. So I thought there must be some sort of story I can do where there's some sort of little crime in a kindergarten where the climactic line will be, and now the blank begins, and you can put an A or an R or an I, whatever it is that right? Finger point, or an O, whatever.
Oh,
it is,
yeah.
In that square, and it'll still work. No matter what letter you put in there, it still works going down. And it took forever to do it, and one of the reasons it took forever was because I had too many jokes and gags about the kids. You know, there was a kidnapping. Did we wake him up? Or whatever the stupid joke was. And so I ended up dividing it into two puzzles. So the first one was a cliffhanger, and the second. So the first one was there were chalk marks on the floor. Someone had whacked the erasers. Okay, so that led into puzzle number two, where they actually had the suspects, who were both five, and they were being grilled. And then, you know, show and tell us. I forget what the jokes were, but then now the blank began. And so the last thing was now the fingerprinting and finger painting and all that began.
And finger pointing.
Now the reason that worked was because those three letters. A, O, or what is the R?
I don't know. You're the letter guy.
A or R. If whatever one you put in there, the clue going down was to Sue Grafton's novel. A is for this.
Oh, sure.
O is for this.
Sure.
R is for this. So no matter which one, it still worked. And her books, her titles of her books are kindergarten things.
Yes.
A is for, B is for. So the whole thing just like worked like a charm. I wasn't expecting it to, but it just did.
So it sounds like you think of your crossword puzzles as a kind of story. I mean, as a kind of narrative. You have titles, Snacks on a Plane.
Yes.
Repeat Business. I'm just looking through your book, George Steinbrenner for President. cliche combos.
Yes. Well, some of them, I've done stories like, yes, I have done stories. And they're harder to do because the story has to make sense in a symmetrical way. We have all these rules and puzzles about symmetry. That if you turn a crossword puzzle diagram upside down, the arrangement of black squares stays the same.
Oh.
Which means if you have a black square in the upper left corner, there has to be a black square in the lower right corner. That also means that if you have a 16-letter answer in the upper left, you have to have a 16-letter answer in the lower right. You have pairs of answers that are the same length. And to get a story to work right in that context is a little hard. I mean, I've done all different kinds of those. Did one? Remember when we say we have to pardon the turkey?
Yeah.
You know. Well, my question was,
Obama's.
What did he do? You know, every year we pardon a turkey. What was, did he, you know, jaywalk? You know, they're all bird jokes. So first he must have jaywalked, then he must have sold beer to minors, and then he must have
to minors,
right? And then anything illegal, eagle in it, and then got in trouble with the migration laws, and then he was robbing banks. You know, so there's all these stupid bird puns. But the question is, it's just someone sat back and said, well, pardoning a turkey from doing what? You know, what is he just? He was just standing there. He got pardoned. So I just think of these things. I can't tell you why.
Is this a good sort of therapy outlet for you for crossword puzzles so you can get all this stuff out of your brain?
Well, it's sort of like
being
a sit down stand up comic, you know, because a lot of these things are things you can actually say on a stage if you wanted to. And I just don't have the temperament to do that. Mm. I mean, I like giving talks, but I like just doing what I do. And that's funny because you have to have the temperament that makes people work for the joke.
Yes.
You know, you're not just writing it down for people to read it. Solvers kind of are like the holders of this secret that these puzzles are funny, but only they know it. You know, so I have to be able to live with that, you know, that idea.
I do want to get to our callers, but just do you work with a computer or, I mean, do you have aids when you're writing a crossword puzzle?
I do now. I didn't until the mid-2000s. I just did it all by hand. But now it's just easier to move answers around if you do some of the software. I do not have a gigantic database like most people do nowadays. Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah, they have like thousands and thousands of words. You can pretty much, with a computer's help, just fill in a corner in a second. And now you have to, if you don't like it, you can push the button again and get another fill, mm-hmm. you know. It's still very human oriented. The person has to still pick what the combination of letters are.
Let me get some callers in. Looks like we have Patricia from Stewartsville joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Patricia. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good
Hi
morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question was, good program, by the way.
Thanks.
My question is, crosswords geared towards children. I have two young children, 6 and 7, and they receive crossword puzzles as part of their homework for their spelling words, and they just thoroughly enjoy them. But I have never been able to find a book for crossword puzzles geared towards children and, you know, things that are relevant to them, whether it be Mickey Mouse or, you know, things on TV or whatnot. Is any such thing exist, and is there some place that, you know, you can gear towards children to get them started into the love of language and the love of words and definitions and things?
Well, but
that was my question.
Sure, let's find out. Do you know more?
Yes, there's a woman named Helene Hovanek who specializes in puzzles like that. She's even done books where it's like an upside-down, right-side-up thing where the parent can be on one side of the book and the child on the other side of the book, and you're solving the same thing. I've seen online lots and lots of books like this. There aren't any exact ones that I liked when I was a kid. At Highlights for Children, for example, they would very often do a puzzle that was like in the silhouette of a kangaroo, big black silhouette of a kangaroo, and all the answers would start with K.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was really cool when I was, you know, 6 or 7 or 8. And so I think anything that has a pictorial aspect to it and words is a really great thing, and I'm sure they're out there. I mean, it's a great teaching tool. I wish, this is my secret thing about crosswords, I wish I had exams that were crosswords in school, because if you did, then every answer you got helped you get another answer, as opposed to the way it really was, if you know, either you know it or you don't. Jeopardy is the same way. But crosswords give you a hint to the next word, which is, you know, everybody's secret wish anyway.
Patricia, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Were you a good student, though?
Yeah, I was. Unfortunately, yeah, I was.
Be proud.
I know.
Regal.
Well, I mean, I was really good at English, obviously, and
yes.
I was really good at math too. And I was there when the new math came in.
And you survived that.
And I liked. Well, it was interesting. It was more of a puzzle stuff. They created planets and stuff. You had to figure out what aliens would do, but it was all math. And I really like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, crossword puzzles are, I mean, they're the sort of geometry of
yes.
them. There has to be something mathematical about them.
There is a lot to it. It's like there's a lot of math. You would think that most crossword fans are like teachers or something, mm. but there are a lot of musicians, math people, engineers. There's something about the engineering of words to do what they do that appeals to a lot of people. And it takes a lot of that to put these together. I mean, you are building something, you know, and you have to know how words work, and you're trying to use the commonest, most interesting words possible. So you're sort of all the time doing value judgments and weeding things out and then redoing a corner. And and thinking, okay, is the order of the theme answers right? I mean,
yeah.
This is the punchline down here. Why do I have it up here? You know, so there's all kinds of things about that I have to think about when it comes, because people generally solve from the top down. You know, I did this once at the San Francisco Examiner. It was an April Fool, happened to fall on Sunday. So I did a puzzle that said, I'm moving to the Big Apple. I'll miss everyone dearly. It was, and at the bottom it said, incidentally, April Fool. Well, a lot of people did not get down to the April Fool part. And they thought I really was going, and they got so much mail. They devoted the entire letter section to just the mail. That if I'd have had a heart attack,
don't
you would have heard from
mail.
My lawyer. Yeah, right. Which was very flattering. But that was, getting all that mail was why we knew that there was a market out there. That was the first time we had an onslaught of mail for a puzzle.
Let me see what that looks like. Marie from Lambertville has to say. Marie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning.
Good
Thank
morning.
You so much for taking my call.
You're
I
so
love
welcome.
Word games. I play words with friends. I do the Sunday Times puzzle, all that other kind of stuff. I have a two-part commentary going on here. If I said nine letters turns into a different story, what would you say?
Oh, dear.
Well, that's a clue for Spiral Staircase, right?
There you go.
I don't even know what you're talking about, but go ahead, Marie.
And it should be it turns into another story.
So my question to you is, what is your favorite crossword clue?
Oh.
And what's the answer? Yeah, what's your favorite? The one that you either created or had to use for a puzzle?
No.
Thanks, Marie. Go ahead.
I do remember one. It was where the answer was NYU, and the clue was where Alan Greenspan got his BS.
Oh, goodness gracious.
It's true. That's where he got it. But there's other ones that aren't kind of like that, are like a holder of board meetings, and that's a nail.
Oh.
Because of
a board.
Where boards meet, really, that's what holds it. So there's so many of these. But that one, the NYU was, for some reason, I always remember that one. I don't know why. But,
Marie, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You were talking about musicians or people interested in music doing crossword puzzles. You play keyboard, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, they wouldn't let me play your piano. You got out in the lobby.
We have one hidden right behind over here.
Oh, well.
Not very well tuned, but.
Well, one of my favorite shows when I was growing up as a kid was Concentration. It's really a puzzle show. It's a rebus show. Mm-hmm. And I, to this day, I remember when you solved it, the music that they played, you know, it just sounded exactly like you would play once you solve something. So all that, I mean, I was a big fan of like TV themes.
Uh-huh.
I can play a lot of those. I was a big music. So obviously the music thing did carry over. I am a keyboard guy. And I've been a rock fan when I was in my teens. I collect movie soundtracks. I'm a big fan of like, even the classic guys like Bernard Herrmann, but also the new guys like Thomas Newman.
Oh, sure.
There's something about the way they do what they do that I've always admired, and I have just a huge collection of their soundtracks, even on record and on CD. And there's a tie over. I mean, I'm a huge music fan.
Tunes rattling around your head,
sure,
along
all
with
time.
All those letters?
Well, I mean, the last episode of Breaking Bad, you know, had this incredibly great, you know, tie-in with Baby Blue, this great song by Badfinger. And I thought, the perfect song. It's my favorite song by them, too. So, yeah, I do a lot of music puzzles. I do a lot of animal puzzles. I'm into dogs and cats a lot. So, I mean, Christopher Walken, you know, Christopher Walken, Ellen Barkin, you know, there's a lot of stuff like this. All this stuff is out there just to be plucked, so I just grab it.
Well, and that's Merle Riegel, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. As I said, one of the country's most popular, inventive, and humorous puzzle writers, and we are celebrating the 100th anniversary of the crossword puzzle, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Beck Institute, internationally recognized source for cognitive behavior therapy, supports WHYY and is accepting clients at their Center for Psychotherapy in Bala Cynwyd. Established by Dr. Judith Beck and Dr. Aaron Beck, founder of cognitive behavior therapy, Beck Institute has served the region since 1994 by providing treatment for psychological challenges, including depression, anxiety, and stress. Details at beckinstitute.org or 610-664-3020.
I'm going to do what God put Ron Burgundy on this earth to do. Have salon-quality hair and read the news.
Ron Burgundy is back in the anchor chair in Anchorman 2. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the film's star, Will Ferrell, and the director, Adam McKay, who co-wrote the film with Ferrell. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Seeking the middle.
These areas around the cities are doing quite well economically. And then as you get further out into more rural places, you watch the incomes drop off.
The median income in America says a lot about our country. The middle is not the average. Who sits in the middle and why? Reports from the middle. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY FM in Philadelphia. And the reason I'm laughing is that I'm trying to get one of my earrings out of the headphones there. But Merle Regal, you'll just ignore me. I'm going to just tuck it in there. And Merle Regal is, as I said, one of the most popular and inventive crossword puzzle writers or authors, and joining us in this hour of Radio Times to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the crossword puzzle. And his crossword puzzles are syndicated in more than 50 papers. And we're taking calls in, at 1-888-477-9499. I also read that for a while, I guess until you really became this crossword puzzle maven, that you wrote screenplays, you wrote for game shows, that you were what, a screenwriter?
I wrote screenplays, but none of them were produced, of course. As I think every, busboy in L.A. has a screenplay in
yes,
his back pocket. But I got to hang around people like that a lot. I did work on game shows. I worked on Crosswits, which was a crossword game show, or the new Crosswits. They revived it in the 80s. And a game show called Couch Potatoes, which was TV trivia, and I knew about that.
Oh, my gosh.
I only worked on game shows that I actually knew something about.
And were you a writer?
Yes, I was one of the writers on the show. In fact, for Crosswits, I think I was the last writer. After a while, the writing staff shrank, and I was the last. I was the only writer on for the last 2-3 months. But it was sort of right up my alley. It was kind of writing funny little, you have to get on your knees to wash them. Dachshunds? No, it's floors. So the idea was to write a question that had a gag answer that the player could. Or the had celebs on the show that they would say first, and then they'd say the real answer after they made the joke, So, my Hollywood days.
But it sounds like you are doing what you were meant to do in life, which is to write crossword puzzles.
I seem to have been doing that for a long time. When I was in college, I always thought it's just going to be too weird to be a person who looks back on his life and say all I did was make crossword puzzles. And but then I had a friend who's named Scott Carter, who was Bill Maher's producer, and I grew up with Scott. And Scott, we were both in L.A., and he said, "Well, Merle, every time you have a job, you don't do the job. You actually make crosswords on the job. So why don't you figure out a way to make crosswords as a living, because, your style is different and maybe it could catch on and all that." So we thought, okay, if we can get into newspapers and be the Sunday crossword in the newspaper, that would work because it would accomplish two things. One is it would be regular gig, and two, it would mean that the way I wrote the clues would be how it gets into print. For years and years, when I sent puzzles in to magazines and books, they were funny when they went in, but they weren't funny when they came out.
Oh, is that right?
Because editors have full control over editing everything.
Yes.
And so, and some of the syndicates had kind of an attitude about, well, we're trying to do a puzzle that's in tune with our syndicate, not someone who's going to, make a puzzle that's actually funny. And very often they wouldn't put your name on the puzzle anyway. And so so people would wonder, well, who made this puzzle or whatever it was. And so even the New York Times didn't start having bylines on the daily puzzles until Will Shortz got in 93. That meant 1942 to 93, no one knew who wrote the daily puzzles, even in the New York Times. And all the other syndicates followed that lead. But I just said, well, no, I don't want to be an obscure person writing funny crossword puzzles. I want to be the last person who sees them. The only way to do that was to start our own little mini homegrown syndicate. And one by one, from the Examiner in San Francisco to the Hartford Current to the Seattle Times to the Philadelphia Inquirer, L.A. Times, Cleveland Plain Dealer, one by one we started adding puzzles where they were using our puzzles every Sunday, and they got in exactly how I wrote them, which was the best part.
Indeed. But do you think crossword puzzles can save newspapers?
I don't know if they can save them, but some sort of larger acknowledgement to the attraction of crosswords or puzzles in general. Remember, at the turn of the century, 1900s, that whole era, they used to have page after page of puzzles. They were in tiny print, but they were hugely popular. This is before comics even came along. Now I know that there's a limited amount of space and it's shrinking, but there are still lots of newspapers that run the crossword with tiny type and little teeny numbers in the squares. We just came in on Southwest Airlines. The Southwest, you know, they've got a captive audience on the plane, and they've got I've never seen numbers in squares of crosswords so tiny. And it's, you know, the older folks, they don't have the eyeballs we had when we were 18, you know.
We don't.
So why don't they just go down to the store, pick up any crossword magazine to see how they do it, and then do the puzzle? They over-engineer it. They over-design it. Or they don't really know. It's not to be read by itself. It's your eyeballs are jumping all over the page. Little teeny print, little teeny squares. All newspapers have to wake up to that and get the puzzles so that people can actually read them and have more fun.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. We have Joanne from Newtown joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
I'm a big fan.
Oh, thanks.
I'm one of those people that travels a lot, so I get all my media electronically, and I have an app on my iPhone for the New York Times puzzles, and was wondering if I can get yours the same way. And my second question is, what do you think about some of the data that's out there saying that crossword puzzles can help older people sort of maintain a level of intellectual acuity?
Joanne, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Go ahead, Merle.
Well, not that we're a holdout per se, but we're looking to make a kind of a deal with an app, because most of the apps that we've seen so far just steal the puzzle, and we kind of felt like we would like a little piece of that action. If you're going to do – it's copyrighted material, so if they're going to do it, we'd like to, you know, do it as an agreement, not that they're just stealing it. So soon to come, yes, it'll happen.
Mm.
And about the thing about the crosswords being good for brain health – I do think that's true. I mean, I
it feels that way, doesn't it?
It feels that way, and the more important thing is that people who solve crosswords feel that way. There was a thing just recently saying that if you do a lot of exercise, that gets the brain pumping too, and that's just about as good. I do think that the more that you solve crosswords, and this has been tested to be true, the more that you solve harder puzzles, the more that you think harder, you do grow dendrites. And the more dendrites you have up there, the longer your brain lasts, and it has more of a staying power. So you might die of a heart attack at 80, but you would have died, you know, a lot sooner from like Alzheimer's or something. I think the jury's still out about definitely is it a guarantee, but I think it definitely is helpful.
Joanne, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Kathy from Abingdale has to say. Kathy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
First, I wanted to say I loved the Simpsons episode with the crossword puzzles.
Was that great?
And how it was almost 3D, and I liked how they did the anagrams, because I am terrible at crossword puzzles. I used to read the comics and then try to do crossword puzzle and then do the cryptogram. However, I could never do the crossword puzzle at all. So a friend of mine said, oh, if you keep trying, you'll get better at it. So I said, all right, I'm going to do it for a couple months. And it was true. I did get better. Now I kind of feel sort of smarter when I figure out something. And I love the humor in when I could figure that out, I just feel some kind of connection. And as I'm getting older, I'm finding it kind of helps me remember things. Like, I don't feel like my day's complete unless I do most of the crossword puzzle. I think I only ever got two totally correct, but it's just such a fun thing, and I wanted to thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Well, that's great, Kathy. No, I know people that do crossword puzzles, is just that sense of satisfaction when you have completed the puzzle, you've struggled over parts of it,
yes,
and it all sort of fits very geometrically or arithmetically together.
Yes, that is one of the great satisfactions. You've got this basically blank thing, looks like a tile floor in a bathroom, and you're going to fill it up, right? And so by the time you're done, if you can actually fill the whole thing up, there's only one way for it to fit together. It does show a lot of satisfaction. Mm-hmm. We used to have a friend who was an airline pilot, And he had this habit of thinking he would know the theme answers instantly. So he would impulsively write in the long answers and be completely wrong every time. I said, I don't want to fly with you.
Right, exactly.
You're the last guy I want to fly with. But then everybody has a different solving style. Now, she has what one thing you need, and that is a lot of motivation. She really wants to solve puzzles. So I've heard people say, you know, they say that crosswords can help your brain health. And I said, yes, but this person has no urge to do a crossword puzzle. They're not going to solve crosswords just for brain health.
Right.
It's that they have some sort of playful turn of mind anyway, and they love language already. And so this is like a perfect thing for them to start. But you can't tell a person, a doctor is going to say, okay, the best thing for you is to solve crosswords. And if you aren't a crossword fan or not a potential one, you're just not going
to
do it.
Yeah, Kathy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And again, you can call at 1-888-477-9499. Do you think we're kind of in a word nerd period? And I think of, you know, spelling bees. Now they're shown on ESPN, Scrabble, chess, you know, all these interesting kind of mathematical word competitions.
Right? Yes, it doesn't hurt that the word nerd and nerd do rhyme, you know, so word nerd is a term. Well, it's the internet just makes everything kind of homogenized. So if they weren't out there before, at least we know about them more now. And language is so changing so much. I mean, we have so many interesting words coming in and coming out. Nanny cam. The old days, gas guzzler. Right.
Selfie now.
Yes, right.
A new one.
Selfie. Alpha male. I mean, there's so many different, you know, so many colorful things. I like the ones like generica, which is the traveling from city to city across the country. Yeah. The same brand names come up and the same billboards, and this is like generica. I like that idea of like prairie dogging. You know, people who work in cubicles, when something happens, they all pop their heads up.
That's great,
isn't it? All these colorful terms.
Because you can see it.
Blame storming. After you've had a real serious meeting, then you go in the other room to see how you screwed up. And so blame storming happens.
As opposed to brainstorming,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I just love all this stuff, you know.
And you have officiated at tournaments, have you not?
Not officiated, but I have been a long time judge at the American Crossword Puzzle Tournament, which is coming up in March.
Wow.
I've been going to that, since 1979 or 80. I always have a puzzle in it. And up until just a year or so ago, I was one of the commentators at the end, you know, Neil Conan and myself. He was the coverage guy, and I was the color. You know, I did the color, like it's like you have, so you have John Madden or something. And so
was it play by play?
Play by play. Yeah, we did play by play. Yes, yeah. And since I was the inside puzzle guy, I did all the wise guy comments about anagrams and what they had wrong and stuff. Yeah.
And I guess time matters, right, in a tournament?
Yes.
Like,
well,
that's correctness.
That's amazing that they can solve so fast. I mean, there's a pianist named Dan Fayer. I think he lives in New York City. And a couple of years ago, when I was at the event, he actually got two letters wrong during the regular part of the contest. How it works is there's seven puzzles you solve in a big room with under time pressure. And if you get any letters wrong, you don't get this big bonus amount of points. And he got two letters wrong on the second or third puzzle, and normally that would be impossible to make up with the other hot shots that go to this thing. He made them up and actually got up on stage. It was a finalist to get up on stage. I've never seen that happen before. Even the previous guy in the movie Wordplay, Tyler Hinman, who was only 20 at the time, won. And he stayed champ for 5 years until Dan Fayer knocked him off. But Dan, I don't know how Dan solves. And we're talking about solving a regular daily crossword puzzle in 2 minutes and a Sunday puzzle in six.
I was reading, maybe it was you writing this, that crossword puzzles kind of knocked Mahjong off.
In the 20s.
In the 20s.
Mahjong was the big thing in the 20s. And yes, and that the crossword book coming out. They said, you know, roses are red. This is from the Mahjong Society, or the Mahjong Makers. It was the Mahjong said, roses are red, violets are blue. We'd like to slit your throats for you when the crossword book came out. Yeah. Well, I mean, this can't blame them, really.
But do you worry about angry birds, you know, knocking off the crossword puzzle?
No, but words with friends, I wish there was something in the program that would avoid the incredibly lousy letters you get on that. I mean, they're lousier than you get in Scrabble.
Right.
I mean, you would think they could build something into it where it's they know, okay, this is absolutely impossible to put anywhere, but there should be some way where you shouldn't get the incredible crap you get half the time when you're playing that game. Sorry.
That's okay. So what do you do when you're not doing crossword puzzles? Because it sounds as if your brain is always sifting and working and moving letters around.
Well, besides watching Breaking Bad.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Well, we watch TV until after 15 minutes, we realize there's nothing on worth watching, except PBS, of course.
Of course.
But then, you know, I'm a big music guy, and I have lots of CDs, and I'm always looking for something new, some new group and some new song. We were in a restaurant, and I heard some guy crooning this song, and I couldn't hear it over the noise until I heard the words, "The Girls in Their Summer Clothes," and it turned out to be this incredibly great song by Bruce Springsteen, singing in this very crooning voice, actually won a Grammy. So there's still lots of songs out there that I haven't picked up on that I just really want to save. And that song is so good. I just, you know, really, really like that kind of stuff. So there's endless music. Now there's like so much music out there, you can't keep track of it all.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to Top 40?
you're showing your age there, Mel Regal.
Yeah, well, you know, what can I tell you? But yeah, we go to movies. We watch a lot of movies. And there's doing a puzzle every single week is quite a job. You
I
know?
Bet.
I may write a book someday. I even have the title for it. I can't tell it because somebody else will steal it.
Oh, but I bet it's...
I'll tell you after. meet me after the concert.
I will.
As they say.
I'll definitely meet you after the concert. Well, it's been a great pleasure to have you back on Radio Times, Merle Regal.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And again, we've been celebrating the 100th anniversary of the crossword puzzle. And our guest, Merle Regal, one of the most popular, inventive, and humorous puzzle writers. And he is syndicated in more than 50 papers, has compiled a collection of his puzzles to mark the anniversary. Merle Regal's 100th anniversary crossword book. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times and you can find out much more about this program, including Facebook, Twitter, email, archives, podcasts, and satellite radio. Well, we want to say goodbye and thank you to our intern, Jessica Crocker. She did so much for us over the past few months involving social media research, even produce some shows. So thank you, Jessica, for all you did for Radio Times. The show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Debbie Builder, and Emily Bryant with Sophie Reed today. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. And we want to close things out with Lonnie Ackerman singing Crossword Puzzle from the 1977 original cast recording of Starting Here, Starting Now.
I am sitting here doing the Sunday Times crossword puzzle. Somehow the words won't come. I am staring at squares, but my eyes never focus, and my mind's feeling strangely numb. What's a five-letter word meaning? Here's an example. Two down, a Peruvian poison dart. Why would Hanky and me used to breeze through the puzzle? On Sunday, the answer would leap in my heart. Beast, that's a new G-N-U, boo-boo-be-doo.